And good morning here on WNRN. Thanks so much for tuning in. We appreciate you being here. Rusty Simpre doing his thing with Les Temps Purdue. You don't? I thought you liked 80s and 90s alternative music. Bluegrass Sunday mornings. I keep trying to get him to do Les Temps Purdue, but for some reason he prefers the bluegrass.
No, they won't let me. I have too much fun.
Too much fun on bluegrass. I think that's one of the things that folks... I think people should call in during the fundraiser and suggest that Drew Thompson and Rusty Simpre switch for one Sunday and see how that goes. For those of you joining us here on WNRN, it is Lexington 95.3 that we want to especially thank you for being here. And L. Oppelman's, L. Oppelman's Pawn Shop, serving Lynchburg families for over a century at 909 Main Street. L. Oppelman always has a selection of jewelry, including estate jewelry and hand-picked GIA-certified diamonds, loose or mounted, plus gold and platinum wedding bands. L. Oppelman also has cultured pearls and watches from brands like Rolex and Tag. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. All right, an important program for the day. We are going to be talking about kids with special needs. At least that's what I call it. And I expect to be severely, that may not be the word, but I expect to be regularly taught and corrected during this hour. We have many guests in the room. Let's see if I can get everybody to say hello as we go along. Stephanie Morris. Stephanie, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for
having
us.
I see you leaning way ahead to get to that microphone. we have Carla Mano. Carla.
Hello, Rick.
Thank you. Next in line, Amy Azzano.
Good morning.
And over there, stuck in the corner, we have Sarah Bleach.
Good morning.
All right. Thanks to all four of you for being here. As I talked about before we got four folks set up, it was no wiggle room invite in over there, so sit tight, tone down your auras, get comfortable. All right, we are going to be talking about kids with disabilities, special needs. Sarah, you contacted me first, and we sort of grew this program together. Is that the right phrase? Kid, what qualifies as special ed, special needs, and is that even the right politically correct phrase anymore?
Yes. Basically, special education, and then I'll go on to kids with special needs. Special education is not a place per se, but it's a host of services that are provided by schools based on the individual needs of kids. And kids are found eligible for special education services through testing, eligibility requirements, etc.
But is that the politically correct phrase? Now, I need to break out my pen. Do you say kids with special needs? Do you say special ed?
I think that that's appropriate. I think that, you know, there's that whole concept of people first language, where you're not defining the child by his or her disability, but you're looking at the child. So a child enrolled in special education, I think, is appropriate. A child with autism is appropriate as opposed to an autistic child. So those are all politically correct, Rick.
You're going to be, all four of you, I can see you're looking at me like, how many times are we going to have to correct him with that? And my goal will be single digits during the hour. All right, that's Sarah Bleach. She is the coordinator at the Parent Resource Center for Albemarle Schools.
Actually, I work with Piedmont Regional Education Program, so I work in five school divisions. I work with Albemarle, Charlottesville, Fluvanna, Louisa, and Greene counties. And so my services as the coordinator of the Parent Resource Center is available to any of those counties.
Next, we have Amy Azzano, Albemarle County's Special Ed Advisory Committee Research.
chairperson for the SEAC, so the Special Ed Advisory Committee, is a organization of parents, and we represent the various schools in Albemarle County. And I'm the chairperson for the SEAC, but I'm a researcher in my day job.
At the Curry School.
At the Curry School of Education, that's right.
Yeah, we're going to find nice and easy words for me to use as we continue through
well,
the hour.
You can just blend them, that's okay.
Blend them together. Next over, Carl Amano. You have your own business, degrees in special education. Tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, so, Rick, I do a variety of things, but I do have a PhD in special education. I have a background in anthropology, so I would actually answer that question about special needs and special education related to different cultures. Here in the States, it is mandated through the IDEA, which is the special education law. First enacted in 1975, and we do call it special education because you might have a child that has a disability or a diagnosis from another, maybe a doctor or some other setting, and if it's not determined through the schools to be affecting education, then it is not a child with special education needs. Now, what I found in working overseas, I do some work with the Department of State primarily. I found that in working, say, in Latin America, some places in Europe, we're more comfortable saying special needs, and it relates to sort of cultural and as well as legal implications. But yeah, here we would call it special education just for clarification because of the impact that the disability has on education.
And then tucked tightly again, we have Stephanie Morris, a parent of two children, and not the only one, but two children needing special education.
That is correct, Rick, yes.
Anyone else? Amy, I know that you said...
Right, my son has autism.
Anyone else?
Yes, I have a 26-year-old daughter with cerebral palsy.
Yeah, Rick's looking at me. I have a very busy two-year-old. We don't know yet.
Got it. All right, so we will be talking about special kids, kids in need of special education, et cetera. So loosen up the fingers. We'll be taking calls a little bit later in the hour if you'd like to participate, ask a question, et cetera. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. All right, so what qualifies as special education, et cetera? We already went into that. I guess one of the questions I want to toss out there early is, has the definition changed over the course of the past 20 years or so?
Has the definition of what changed?
Special education. You know, when you define a child who needs special education, has that changed, whether it's by medical, by family, by government? Carla?
Yeah, Rick, there certainly have been a number of changes. Again, it's a very new, in terms of if you think about 1975 to now, a relatively new law and mandate within our culture. So what we have seen is some trends and some changes. We still have what we call the high incidence disabilities being the ones that you find more often.
Say and that again. What?
We call it high incidence.
H-I-G-H.
Yes. And okay. That would be, you know, despite the fact that in the news there's a lot about the autism spectrum disorders in terms of increasing numbers there, we do have learning disabilities and emotional disturbance as the high incidence disabilities. In other words, you see them more often within the special education population and considered relative to the general population. There have been changes, however. Right now, we do have 13 categories under IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which is the name of the special ed law. So there are 13 categories, and those have changed throughout the years. So, in fact, for example, back in the early 90s, when we started to actually talk about what most folks out there know as Asperger's syndrome, that wouldn't have been considered at all back when the law was first enacted. So, yes, there have been significant changes.
Again, we are talking about kids in need of special education with our guest today, Sarah Bleach, Dr. Carla Mano, Stephanie Morris, Amy Azzano. Amy, do you have your doctorate yet?
I do, yes.
So I'll put that in front, too. I want to call everyone who's earned their doctorate by the proper title.
Fair enough.
If you're going to put all that time into it, let's, you know, put it on the envelope. Let's, you know, we're going to talk about your specialty, then let's do so. Are special education kids... And I want to keep referring to them as special kids, and I don't know that that's appropriate or not, but are special kids more accepted now in today's society? Stephanie?
That's an interesting question, Rick. I believe society has become much more aware, and increasingly families and cultures and societies are aware of this trend of special needs, special education. I think it's an ongoing learning process for the community, for the schools, and for families to become accepted. It's an ongoing educational process for each and every one of us.
Carla referenced the IDEA in 1974, 75, in the early middle 70s. And, you know, basically that law changed the way that kids with disabilities were educated. Before that, they were not educated in public schools. So once kids started being mainstreamed into public schools, I think that was huge. It was huge for the families who had kids with disabilities, and it was huge for just general education, kids and their families to be exposed to that. So I think, you know, like Stephanie said, there's definitely been a lot of improvement and a lot of awareness, but I think we have a long way to go.
But aside from in the school, and we're going to cover a variety of sort of sections throughout the hour. Again, we are talking about kids needing special education. I'm going to flaw myself. and someone just, you know, give me the evil eye if I do so. But again, to alert the public who's listening, we are talking about special kids, kids in need of special education for whatever reason. Our guest today, Amy Azzano, the chair of SEAC, Special Education Advisory Committee, also earned her doctorate. Stephanie Morris, a parent with two children, Dr. Carla, in need of special education, Dr. Carla Mano, Sarah Bleach, accepted in the school system because there's a law to do so. Does that make it so that kids in need of special education are more accepted in the public?
You know, that's a very broad, difficult question.
There's four people in the room.
Yeah. You know, I don't think you could ask that question about any segment of society, whether they've been accepted. I think that as society changes and people learn and we're exposed to different types of people and different types of cultures, they're more accepted. But certainly, I know that for my daughter, and probably, you know, I'm not speaking for these other women, but, you know, there are difficulties that she's run into in her life that have to do with her disability. But I don't have a diagnosed disability, and I've run into issues in my life. So I think it's so dependent on the individual child and circumstance.
But if you were to walk down through the downtown mall, and Stephanie, I'll go back to you. Two children, one with autism, one with Asperger's.
Correct.
Have you found a difference? And Sarah, I'll toss this out to you as well, because your daughter, you think you said, was in her 20s. Do you feel as though when there's an incident that is more understood by the general public because of the because autism receives so much news around it, or that everyone is still looking like, why don't you know, please do something about that?
Well, again, to expand upon what Sarah was saying, Rick, it depends on the situation. It's taken me years to be able to, when we're in public or in society, you know, just walking down the downtown mall and We have a situation because my children don't look like they have a handicap physically. They are not impaired. For someone not to make a stereotypical, you know, wow, that child is why is he acting that way? But so I have learned to kind of address the issue before if he's having a situation that, oh, my child's autistic, I'm really sorry. And I find, Rick, that as a caregiver, as an individual with these children, if you can kind of set the tone before they can make mm-hmm. that unfortunately blanket assumption that of the child not being reprimanded properly or whatever the case may be. And it took me years, and I took some advice from folks and just said, I'm sorry, my child's autistic. And a lot of times then that just breaks the walls down. And not to say that it works every single time in every single fashion. We have a handicap sticker, and we all get out of the car, and we get looks from society as to why are we in a handicap spot sometimes. That I'm finding, by law that, you know, we as a society have to embrace all the handicaps, mm-hmm. Whether they're emotional, physical, and I find that, as I go through this process that, one handicap is no less or more, no more severe than mm-hmm. the next.
That's right.
And Sarah, talking about because your child is older in the 20s, have you noticed any sort of change in the public from 20 years ago being out on the downtown mall or elsewhere with your daughter as opposed to now?
I don't. It's as a parent, it's hard to answer that question because my daughter is her own individual now. I think that it's teaching kids at a very young age to represent themselves and to be self-advocates. So when I see my daughter on the mall or I'm with my daughter out or I talk to my daughter about her experience, I now hear it from her own perspective. She's an adult and she's really a great self-advocate. So that's a hard question to answer.
That's Sarah Bleach. She's from the Piedmont Regional Education Program. Amy, I keep mm-hmm. Noticing your nodding of heads, Dr.
Right.
Amy Azzano. Your thoughts on this?
I think maybe I'm not as far along with my development as a parent as Stephanie maybe has come because I guess maybe I get a little defensive. My guy's still pretty little. He's 5 years old, and I find myself not willing to apologize for his behavior. I'm not, maybe that would help to say, I'm sorry he has autism, but, it's his behavior is not at his will. It's not something that he chooses. It's not a challenge that he has accepted. This is something that has been put on him. It's not a choice. It's not my choice. So I feel like, when he's having a meltdown or there's something like that happening and we have looks or, we have to abandon our shopping cart at Harris Teeter, that sort of thing, that's not something I'm willing to apologize for because it's not our fault. It's an ongoing challenge, and I think you're right, looking at Stephanie, that, it's partly our children's issue, but then also how we respond to that as parents and make our peace with that.
11:18 here on the wake-up call as we talk about kids in need of special education, some academics, some parents, a little bit of blending there with folks. Let me take a moment and give you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. James River flood warning for Richmond until this evening. Today it's mostly sunny in Charlottesville, highs 45 to 50. Tonight there's a 70% chance of snow after 2 a.m. mixing with rain. And then lows 30 to 35, upper 20s in the valley in Lynchburg. Partly sunny today, Richmond high of 52. In the valley, it's 41, partly cloudy in Lynchburg at 45, 47 in Richmond, 46 in Charlottesville. All right, back to our guests. Sarah Bleach, Dr. Carl Amano, Dr. Amy Azzano, and Stephanie Morris as we talk about kids with special education needs. All right, so we talk about what's going on in the school system. What are the challenges between the parents and the teachers and the school administration? Because I, you know, when I was talking about this program with some friends, one of the first questions that came up had to do with, I think the phrase was helicopter parents. Was you see that a lot for in this sort of generation. And the question was, does that, because your child has special needs, does that even make it worse for the parent to constantly be in contact with the school system about the needs of their children, about what's going on, et cetera? Carla?
Yeah, Rick, excuse me. Some of the work that I do locally is advocacy, you could call it. I call myself an educational consultant through my business, but I do advocacy for families. And my goal there is to have everyone can be a self-advocate. In other words, parents have the tools to work with the schools, but no matter how smart you are, we live, you know, obviously in an academic community of really brilliant parents call me crying, asking for support in this area. What happens is you need to still be the parent. You need to have some time to mourn, if you will, some of the challenges that you experience. And sometimes, even if you are able to be a self-advocate in other areas, it's a very challenging system to negotiate. Both the personalities within the school, what you're dealing with at home. It's, you know, maybe sensitive to say here, but there is a higher percentage of divorce for families with kids with disabilities. And we already have a fairly high one in our culture. So what occurs is that families really need support. There need to be, you know, education tools out there. Sarah's program, which is we should say that the PrEP kind of programs exist throughout the nation. It's also part of a mandated component for parents to have support. But that is still a component related to the schools. And sometimes parents get a feeling that is very us and them when they get down the path, especially if there are discipline or behavior challenges. So what tends to happen is that it seems that when we talk about special education, isn't that great? Isn't that wonderful? There are questions when you get down the path as to whether or not your advocacy is a challenge within the school, as you mentioned, whether you're seen as having more contact, more challenging contact with the schools. And that, as long as we can get communication open and have parents understand their rights and schools understand their rights and responsibilities and focus be on the individual needs of that child, we tend to have a lot of success, but you can imagine the complexity within that.
We will start taking phone calls now, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. You can send me an instant message, WNRN Studio, through the AOL instant message. Our guests today, Stephanie Morris, Dr. Amy Azzano, Sarah Bleach, Dr. Did I do that properly? Stephanie Morris, Dr. Amy Azzano, Dr. Carl Amano. They're just too phonetically similar. And Sarah Bleach. Again, I think I've already hit like five errors in the first 20 minutes.
Well, we're not counting.
Let me thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support, bringing the Banff Mountain Film Festival to Charlottesville on Sunday, March 11th and Monday, March 12th at the Paramount Theater. Proceeds will benefit the Ravana Conservation Society. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road in Charlottesville. They have three locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com online. You know, I want to get back to the school situation. Kids with special education needs in the classroom. Amy, Dr. Azzano, tell me, what does the Special Education Advisory Committee do? Because you're listed under the Albemarle County School System website, so tell me more.
Okay, so we represent the various schools in the county. So, for example, I represent actually not a school, but the preschool program that is offered by Albemarle County. And so we have self-contained classrooms. We have services that reach out into the homes. We have Bright Star classrooms. We have a variety of different classrooms that are out there for preschool-aged children. And then we have representatives from all of the different schools, high schools, middle schools. And we come together once a month, and as representatives, we try to respond to parents' needs in the schools. And we report to the school board. We deliver sort of our annual recommendations, if you will, in the spring about the needs of our special education children, not just the unmet needs of our kids, but all of the needs of our students. So sometimes we hear, you know, this could come down to speech language services that our children are receiving, occupational therapy, IEP advocacy. We really field all different types of questions, concerns, comments. And Albemarle County is the only one I can speak to. We have a very active SEAC. We've really tried in the last year to increase our representation and get more parents to attend the meetings. And we've been extremely successful this year. We work very closely with the special education administrator with the county, and it's a great way for parents who, especially parents who are struggling to get their child services, parents who have just recently had a child diagnosed with a special education need or with a disability. It's great to reach out to your local SEAC, regardless of your county. Every school division has to have one under the law, because it puts you in touch with parents who have already been there for a little bit of time, and so we can provide resources for you, and it's just a great sort of place to come together and to address those issues that are, you know, particularly related to school and school life.
Well, one of the things I noticed is that there is, I guess, meant to be a representative for each school mm-hmm. in Albemarle County, whether it's elementary school, high school, et cetera. But there are many seats listed as vacant. Is that because there is such a low number of kids with special needs, or because the parents have enough other things to do that they're not participating in that manner?
Well, let's say that I'm not entirely sure that the website is up to date, so there might not be quite as many vacancies as there are listed. I do think that it has been a challenge to get representation at all of our different schools. And quite honestly, you know, parents have a tough job no matter what. It's hard to have little kids, especially when we're helicopter parents, apparently. but, you know, when you have a child with a disability, it's just, I don't want to slight anyone else's experience, but it does seem tougher. You know, your lifestyle is not yours. You don't, you know, have your kids fit into what you expect life to look like. You know, you really have to change your lifestyle and your behaviors to fit the needs of your child. And so coming out once a month to a meeting, for even if it's only 2 hours, it's a huge challenge. I know it is for me, and I have a lot of support, so I know it is for other parents maybe who have less support. So I think that it is difficult to get all of the schools represented, but I think parents do a really the best job that they can to advocate for not only their child, but for the other children in their school building.
Stephanie?
I've been a member of the SEAC committee for years, and Amy has just done a fantastic, fabulous job in the last year, Rick, of getting the word out. It is a very wonderful program, just like the PrEP. And it does seem, you know, even though you might see some slots available there, that doesn't mean that we're not this grassroots community of special needs, you know, relaying the information that might be coming from our county administrators or Sarah attending a meeting or a certain speaker coming forth to talk to the group, that the emails and the circulations go out to these schools. I mean, it is in downtown and some of our more rural locations. The representation might not be, you know, as easy the parent rep to get up there on a particular evening. But it's very important to our community, and it is a wonderful, you know, vehicle for our parents and caregivers to tap into, and again, especially if they're just starting the process.
Let me just reiterate what Amy said, which is that every school division is mandated to have an advisory committee. So if you're unsure about who your parent contact is, contact your local special education director.
I wanted to take sort of flow between context here, is that we're talking about the parent and the public and the school system. Is there's something coming up, and Sarah, this is what got us started, is the Sprout Film Festival, where you're sort of bringing the school system into the public, or the sort of mixing the two for the child and the family. Talk about that real quick.
Well, part of my job is really disability awareness. I really take that seriously. You know, inclusion in school means that kids with disabilities are included in mainstream classrooms and just access to the entire curriculum. But also that there's a lot of, they're in the community, people with disabilities, whether they're adults or kids, need to be included. And that could be in sports and recreation. And the arts in particular is just an interest of mine. So for many years, I've been involved in the Very Special Arts Program here in Charlottesville, Albemarle, which is a national organization which promotes the arts and creativity in people with disabilities. We have an art show every year at the Martin Luther King Performing Arts Center, poetry book. We have several people with disabilities who go out and teach classes. And from that experience with Very Special Arts, I came upon the Sprout Film Festival, which is a touring film festival. It originated in New York City. And they collect films from all over the world made by people with disabilities and or about people with disabilities. So the Sprout Film Festival this year, and this is our third year bringing it to Charlottesville, is coming up on Friday, March 9th. So, and that's at the Performing Arts Center. We have two shows. And it's just a wonderful, uplifting event. It's not, we don't highlight films that are depressing. Everybody walks out of there laughing and having fun. And So I would really just encourage listeners to bring friends and family. It's for fifth graders and up, so it's appropriate for that age group of kid. And of the two shows, at the two shows, we're showing different films. So if you come to the free morning show, feel free to come back for the evening show, which there's a $10 donation.
Let me take a moment and thank The Backyard for their support here on WNRN. The Backyard, UVA Corner's culinary secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a seasonal menu with daily specials and a rotating list of beers on tap. Backyard is now open on Sundays, serving brunch and then a pub food menu until close. For more information, it's 202-8215. You can find them on Facebook. Online, it's thebackyarduva.com. Again, our guests today, Stephanie Morris, Sarah Bleach, Dr. Amy Azzano, and Dr. Carla Mano, as we talk about kids in need of special education. Blueberry 1121 just sent me an instant message question. Are classes or seminars taught to students about accepting special ed kids?
That's a good question. I think there are teachers who make an effort to do that with their classes. There are certainly people in the community available to do those seminars for classes, but it's really up to the teachers, principals, and parents to really request that. But that's a great question and certainly a needed service.
Carla, is that something that would or should be done? Because, you know, for some people would say, well, that just points out the specialness in another way. Now you're specifically identifying someone who's different. And certainly in middle school, that might not be the best thing to do. Would you agree with Sarah? Would you identify some things that make that a problem?
Yeah, I guess I would take that as similar to the individual special needs for the child. Every family is different. Every child is different. So in my work, I try to take the family from a holistic perspective that this child is a part of a system here at home as well as in the school, and for families to really think about how they want that approached individually. For example, if a child is, we've used this word mainstreaming, the idea that mainstreaming could mean that the child is in the school, their home school, or it could mean that they're in a classroom all day with same-aged and developmentally non-disabled peers. The kids that are mainstream, we usually mean they're in classes that aren't what we call self-contained, that they're not in another part of the building with all kids with disabilities. So just to clarify that. So if a child is fully mainstreamed, a family might ask me how how to approach that in terms of educating other peers. Excuse me. And some parents go in to the classroom and have their own discussion with the school. Again, considering developmental age, middle school, you're right, is very different from an early elementary setting where you could have some kind of role plays, some discussions. And again, it's an individual family decision and based on the kids' needs as well as the family's comfort level. And administrative as well as teacher support is really important, as Sarah was saying.
Dr. Rosano?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I think the individual family, the point that Carla's making is an important one. But just in general, I think, you know, there's so much attention being given right now to bullying in schools that, you know, you can do a lot to teach empathy across classrooms and schools without highlighting, you know, this child has autism, this child has this disability. And really, you can talk about how everyone, as Sarah pointed out earlier, you know, we all have challenges that we face. Some are more obvious, some have names. But we all have these challenges in life. And if we begin to see each other as individuals with many differences, and we represent our own disabilities and abilities, and in each person that we have sort of that complexity, and we start to teach all kids to respect and honor that, I think it's a way to kind of grow empathy and grow respect in a school, so that by the time these kids do get to middle school and beyond, when perhaps disabilities do become somewhat more pronounced, then maybe we can grow a younger generation of kids who are just so much more
tolerant.
And even beyond tolerance, really respectful of those differences.
979-0919 if you want to call in and ask a question. You don't have to send it by instant message like Blueberry did, or 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS if you have a question on our topic today, kids with special ed needs. Our guests, Sarah Bleach, Dr. Amy Azzano, Stephanie Morris, and Dr. Carl Amano. Siblings, I forget what phrase you used, Carla, siblings without a special need, I forget what phrase you used, but brought it up immediately to me.
I'm talking about the family system.
Yes. And Stephanie and Amy, you both have children who do not have a special ed requirement. I want to talk about the siblings who don't have that situation and their emotions and how that fits into the daily family setup. Stephanie?
That's an excellent question, Rick. I have three. My oldest is not in need of any special education. And we read a lot. We read a lot of books. There's a lot of local authors here. There's a national, it seems, you know, of how siblings to, you know, embrace, accept, and be the next generation for our children with special needs, special disabilities, for acceptance in society and in schools. But it is difficult with all the pressures that our children have out there already, and you add on a child that's in a has whatever the disability is, their peers at first may not understand if they're not used or to being seen. My children have been exposed to disabilities. We've attended Kluge and various many different programs throughout the counties of many different disabilities. I'd say the more exposure, the more you can talk about it, the more that we can embrace, enlighten, and accept these. I see it now as such a huge opportunity and a learning for our generation. A lot of these disabilities, Rick, are somewhat new to our generation, but they're not going away. They are here to stay, and they're only going to get bigger.
Amy, I'll come back to you in a second. Sarah, does the Piedmont Regional Education Program, does that include any materials towards the family as a whole rather than just towards the parent and helping the child?
Yes, of course. You know, I do a lot of trainings and workshops. We have a few conferences a year, and there are always sessions that have to do with families. In terms of siblings, what's coming up in April is we're going to do something that's called, it's similar to Sib Shops, which is actually a day-long event for siblings of kids with disabilities. So those siblings are able to get together, and just through fun activities, they're able to share and just feel supported by other kids who are going through a similar situation. And sometimes those kids will keep in contact for a long time. So, yeah, certainly we try to support the entire family, obviously, but siblings are a huge piece of that.
And Amy, I know that you have actually written a book about this that you're in review, I believe is the phrase you used.
That's right.
So obviously you're trying to deal with this on a positive level. Tell me more about your family setup and how that's worked.
Sure. Well, one of the reasons why I wrote the book, a couple years ago, my daughter woke up and she had a really horrible dream about watching some little ducklings go down to a pond. And then when the ducklings got in the water, she realized that they couldn't swim. And so she tried to scoop them up and was able to save all of the ducks except for one. And the other thing that was happening in our lives at the time was that my son was sort of in a habit of spelling duck, D-U-C-K spells duck. And so those two narratives sort of converged into a story that dealt with the fears and anxieties and the worries and all of the different ways that our siblings, I think, internalize what's happening in that family. Because, you know, the sibling, I think, has all of the same concerns that the adults have, except for that they're kids. And so I really think that worry happens on two levels. You know, one, just the pure empathy and compassion that they have for their brother or sister with a disability. But then also, you know, what does this mean for me? You know, what's it going to mean when my brother comes to my school? What's it going to be like on the bus? What's it going to be like when he has friends? You know, when, like Stephanie was saying, you know, when you have a friend that's over and they say, you know, what's wrong with your brother? That's a hard question for a little kid to answer. And so, you know, we sort of in our family have our badge of honor is to be weird. And, you know, my son used to say, do you weird? And so we say, yeah, we weird, you know, like, so that's kind of our running joke that, you know, we're all a little strange.
It sounds
and
like you could
okay.
have a much larger family in this county if you tried. All right. We're going to take a call real quick. It is 11:41 on the wake up call. And let me push all the proper buttons for this. John, are you with me? All right. Make your comment for me, all right?
Fear like they're going to say something politically incorrect, and there's like this charged atmosphere around these discussions that, you know, someone at goodwill could just use the wrong language and get in trouble. It seems to suggest that the people who are in the advocacy community are somehow go over the top in criticizing people for being politically incorrect, and I think that's really not such a valid concern, but I just wanted to get people's reaction to that observation and see, you know, do you feel like beyond the normal stigmatization that there's this also this view that people in the advocacy community, people who are involved with special education are perceived to be very politically correct and intolerant of people who may not share their level of expertise.
All right, I'm going to let you take that feedback
okay.
off air. Thanks, man. Ladies?
Yeah, I'd like to share a sort of funny anecdote about that to John's question. Yeah, when we made the shift to what we called the people-centered language that Sarah had brought up earlier, in other words, and this is Carla here, in other words, not saying an autistic child, but saying a person with autism. At a conference for people who are blind, people kept saying that are not blind to the group of folk,
you, instead of normal.
It's saying regular. You, the people who have blindness, kept saying this. And finally, the advocacy group said, look, we're blind. Call us blind. So I think it depends on the disability in terms of the people-centered language. And I'd also mention that sometimes when we shift language, if you drill down into, say, the special education academic world and how that filters down, sometimes it becomes an alienating lexicon, like an acronym within a certain jargon within a certain industry. And I think that at John's point is sort of valid. It can become alienating and become a challenge. I think the people-centered language in general is a good movement, but there have been lots of shifts within the language that make people who maybe thought they knew what they were talking about, even with their own child, suddenly there's a new name for the disability and they're confused. And I think that confusion can lead to some challenges.
All right, 11:44 in the wake-up call. Thanks, John, for that. If you would like to make a call and point out that I'm squeamish or some other comment to the women in the room, Sarah Bleach, Dr. Amy Azzano, Stephanie Morris, Dr. Carl Amano, as we talk about kids in need of special education, 11:45 on the wake-up call. And let me read you the Hook's headlines for the week. Convicted of second-degree murder with a 26-year sentence. George Hughley will be in his mid-40s when set free. The Hook asks, what's next for George? Less than a month after the sudden closing of St. Martin Cafe, grieving customers did more than mourn their loss. They've rallied together to help reopen the restaurant. And to bring attention to their living wage campaign for UVA employees, 20 students just finished up their second week of the hunger strike. The Hook, you can handle the truth. And let's thank Dixon Disposal for their support of WNRN. Dixon can help you protect the earth by utilizing single-stream recycling and their regular pickup service. Dixon Disposal offers weekly leaf removal up to 5 pounds or more, and you can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. For more information, it's DixonDisposal.com or 434-978-2111. And I see the phone ringing now. We'll get that call in just a second. And the man, Drew Thompson, just walked in the room for Les Temps Perdue at noon. Drew will be featuring the best of 80s and 90s alternative with bands like NXS, Roxy Music, and White Zombie. He also takes your request. Les Temps Perdue brought to you in part by Caliente. And Drew, just so you know, I wanted you and Rusty to switch shows sometime in the future. Rusty's going to do Les Temps. You're going to do Sunday Morning Bluegrass. All right, back to our guests as we talk about kids needing special education. We were talking about the siblings and how that works. Amy, your book. But there must be times when there are negative emotions, whether it's anger, fear, jealousy. How do you deal with that as a parent?
We don't deal with any of that. We're just kidding.
Perfect.
That's right.
Let me back up for a second and sort of tighten that question
okay.
Because I think it was you where I read about taking your daughter to Disney.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So talk about
blog,
that
yeah.
and how you sure. sort of took the negative and turned it into a positive.
Yeah. So, you know, I can't remember. I think maybe Carla said this, that, you know, there is a little bit of, not a little bit, there's a lot of grief and mourning that goes along with having a child with a disability and sort of rearranging what you thought your family might look like, what you thought, you know, your hopes and dreams and family vacations. And, you know, our child is very fearful, has a lot of anxiety around the noises and wind and all kinds of things that people might take for granted. So a beach vacation, for example, is not a thrill for him. It's a bit of a nightmare. So we had to make a lot of decisions about what that would mean for our child who did not have a disability, for the sibling. And so my example of Disney World was that, you know, ever since she learned how to, you know, learned about Disney World, was saying, you know, when can we go? When can we go? And I kept thinking, you know, oh, at this age, that'll be great because then your brother will be this age. And then, of course, within that time was when he was diagnosed with autism. So I had an opportunity to go to actually for a conference to Orlando and was able to take my daughter. And so we sort of surprised her with this, like, you know, girls trip. And we did Walt Disney World. And it was really wonderful. And, you know, we had a great time and we saw the sights. But then, you know, every night sort of back at the hotel room, you know, there was sadness because it was like, you know, I miss Daddy. I miss my brother. And, you know, both of us were, you know, acutely aware that it wasn't quite a family vacation. But, you know, in the end, I think that she'll see that we tried to make every effort to give her what we had hoped would be sort of, quote, a normal childhood for her.
All right, we do have a caller. And I believe it's Laura Dayport, head of exceptional education at JMU, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Would you turn down your radio in the background?
I'll turn it off. How's that?
Okay. And I'm going to set up so everyone can hear you with your question or comment. So when you're ready.
Okay. I just wanted to let these folks know that our student chapter of the Council on Exceptional Children has put together some disability awareness kits that we have been taking to the local elementary schools and middle schools, and have done some disability awareness days in local schools that have been very helpful in starting dialogue with children about including people with disabilities, and kids are so much more comfortable with that and are in more inclusive environments now. And so we found that does an awful lot for just making people more comfortable with the language and making people more aware that disabilities are sometimes invisible, and that disabilities are contextual, that sometimes you evidence a disability in one context but may have a talent for that very same thing in another context.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's Laura Dayport, head of Exceptional Education Department at JMU. Sarah Bleach, I saw you writing down information there from her. Is that something that, you know, obviously that would be special, important in terms of families and the community?
Well, I do know of, I'm not sure if this is what she was referencing, but I do know that there's some wonderful disability awareness information out there for kids and adults of all ages. So I'll certainly look into what she mentioned.
Stephanie, again, our guest today, as we talk about kids with needs of special education, Amy Azzano, Dr. Amy Azzano, Dr. Carl Amano, Sarah Bleach, Stephanie Morris. Stephanie, to follow up on Amy's talk about the girls' trip to Disney and turning something that may be a negative part of the problem into a positive part, what are some of the firsts, I think I wrote down, the firsts and the mists part of having a child with a disability of some part?
I'm just going to speak for myself, obviously, but I think some of the firsts is that whole mourning process as a parent, as a caregiver, as a family, that you have been given this diagnosis of a child that is going to need some sort of assistance, whether it's with school, physical, emotional, mental, and again, to elaborate on Amy, it just completely changes how you constructed your family unit to be. So that, for us, Rick, was the very first. And for some families, that might not happen overnight. It didn't happen for us. It took a long time. My youngest, who is in an inclusive classroom in the county, he is 8, and it has taken us, our family unit, a while. It's something that is a mourning, and then it's a rebirth, and it's an acceptance, and it's you plant that seed, and you might put the dirt over it and think that it's going to go away, but it keeps sprouting up, and what is coming out of that sprout, no pun intended, Sarah, for your film festival, is something that is glorious, and you it's embracing, and the more that you can nurture and develop that sprout coming forth is something that family with special needs or a special education children is just so miraculous.
Mm-hmm. And, Dr. Mott, go ahead.
And just let me add that is one emotion and one feeling that hasn't changed in 26 years, I distinctly remember feeling exactly the same way when my daughter was born and diagnosed.
And Dr. Mon, I was going to ask you, you mentioned at the start of the program having a two-year-old.
Yes.
And sort of going through the process now of identifying if there is a need and...
No, I said he's a busy two-year-old and we don't know yet because we don't identify typically, well... Yeah, he's busy. I have had some challenges in terms of as I, do more work to try to, outside of the home to try to make sure that he transitions to daycare settings. And it's certainly a challenging, sometimes I leave a situation where he's had a behavior challenge and I wonder, cobbler's son never has shoes. When do I begin to look into could this be a more significant problem? And yet I also don't want to overpathologize the young boy just because I have this PhD in special ed. So I'm always balancing, comments from other professionals, other folks, and trying to make sure that I'm, minimizing a challenge. Early intervention we know is very important for kids, particularly with behavior challenges. So as well as across the disability areas, some disabilities we don't identify till later. In fact, within the law, and it might be important to mention, when we're talking about the categories, there's a term we use called developmental delay that we can use up till age 9. So a lot of kids, when we talk about special education, might fall under the umbrella of developmental delay. There's something going on, but we haven't fully, identified it and labeled it in the way that maybe later on we will.
Dr. Zano, when does the public school help? We talked about that earlier, some of the change of the legal changes and requirements. But are there any chances, any times when it is, when it hurts to have the child in the public school setting?
I'm not really for sure I can speak to that. That certainly hasn't been our experience. On the contrary, when our son started public school here in Albemarle County, his two preschool teachers, I'm going to give a shout out to Sue Eaton and Pam Tomko, they were really the first people outside of our home. We had some service providers who came into our home who were also really fantastic, but really until our son started transitioning, that was the first time that he was successful at being outside of his comfort zone in our home. And that's a huge challenge just to literally leave our house and to be in another space. And so it wasn't until our son transitioned to that, that we knew we had sort of a glimpse of what our future could be, that maybe he will be okay. He can be really successful in the school environment. And, these are highly qualified professionals. They have backgrounds in special education. And so my husband and I are both educators, and we understand education. We've worked our entire adult lives in education, and we're still parents first. And so just like I could do when I was in the classroom things for other people's kids that the parents couldn't do, the same is true for my son and also my daughter. And so it's only been a really wonderful experience for us.
11:57 here on the wake up call. This is WNRN Charlottesville, WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. We are talking about kids with needs for special education. Dr. Amy Azzano, scientist at the UVA Curry School of Education. Stephanie Morris, a parent with two kids in need of special education. Sarah Bleach from the Piedmont Regional Educational Program. And we're going to finish up in just a moment with the Sprout Film Festival and Dr. Carl Amano, run your own business, Accord Consulting, correct?
Yes.
One of the things that came to me was, you talk about problems that you need to solve. What are the problems do you need to help parents with as they negotiate the educational system?
Yeah, so first, certainly, depending on the age of identification, parents really need to understand what they're dealing with, be able to read the professional reports, psychological evaluations, educational evaluations, medical, and really understand what's going on. So I help families do that. And that's really the first step, so they know what to ask for. And then knowing what's available, knowing what the school is offering, and what their rights are to ask for what may not be available. And then that process changes all the time because the kids are changing and the settings are changing. And so it's a constantly, it's a dynamic process.
Stephanie, is that something that you a similar, did you have someone to help you with that or wish
you know,
that you'd
I had? Wish that I would have known Carla years ago. I did not know that that was out there. I've known Sarah for years and, of course, involved in SEAC. And to kind of carry on with what Carla named it, early diagnosis and whatever the disability is, and then the mourning process, but then to get out there and actually try to embrace the all of the resources that Albemarle County has to offer, which is quite a multitude of various different programs and facilities. But don't get overwhelmed. I mean, that is one thing if I can tell any parent or caregiver listening today is don't get overwhelmed and don't give up. Call Carla, call Sia, call Sarah, and we will hopefully walk you through one step at a time because the process, Rick, is insurmountable mm-hmm. at first.
It's mm-hmm. insurmountable for me for the hour to talk about it.
Right.
Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for supporting WNRN. You can find them at Mead Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville. They provide custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. You'll be able to go back and see the podcast for this, listen to the podcast for the program to get more information, and I'll get Sean to put up some links for everything. But I want to go out, Sarah Bleach, we put this together because of the Sprout Film Festival. Once again, real quick, where can people find it, et cetera?
Well, our website is prep-prc.org. There's information on the website there. If you want to look at trailers of the movies, just to preview some of them, you can go to the Sprout Film Festival website in New York City. If you want a list of the film lineup, you could find that on our website as well.
All right. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you.
All four of you for coming in and squeezing into the room. Next week, we'll be talking with Corbin Addison, who's just written a book about child trafficking and prostitution around the world. He'll also be participating in the Charlottesville Festival of the Book coming up soon. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick.